Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tatra yadi tvam padartasya jivatmano jnanatvam nityatvam cha pratamato vichara gocharak syat tadaiva tatpadartasya tadvishatvam subodham syad iti tad bodhyatum anyartas cha paramarsha iti nyayena jivatmanas tadrupatvam aha Natma jajana namarishyati naidate sao napshiyate savanavid vyabichari namhi sarvatra shashvadamapayanu upalabdi matram prano yatindriya balina vikalpitam syat. Continuing this line of thought, if one considers the entity you, that is, the jiva soul, to be conscious and eternal, one can then easily understand the entity that, the supreme, to be similar in nature. To inform us of this idea, the Bhagavatam states that the jiva soul partakes of the supreme's qualities. Thus the Bhagavatam follows the logic founded in the Vedanta Sutras. This consideration is for the sake of understanding the other. I'm sorry, I forgot that we were going to deal with the questions. I only got questions from two devotees. Let me know if you have a problem with this format. Try to do it. Try to send your questions through the email. Okay. It's okay. Let me find. Nityananda Prabhu had a question. Here in these Anuchedas, we're talking about the Sambandha Tattva. Jiva Goswami, we've already gone through Jiva Goswami's explanation of how the description of Vyasadeva's trance in the 7th chapter of the 1st canto of the Bhagavatam is giving an outline of the Bhagavatam's, the meaning of the Bhagavatam, including the Sambandha Tattva. But he has the question that he thought that it's there's an Anubandha Chatushtaya, or four prerequisites, questions that have to be answered before one starts a serious textbook. And Sambandha is on the list of four things. Shouldn't that be established first before any other discussions start? And therefore it seems that Jiva Goswami has postponed establishing what the Sambandha is, because now he's talking about Vyasadeva's vision. Well, okay, the thing is, these are two different things. The Anubandha Chatushtaya, the word Sambandha is there, but it's a different, it's a whole different sense of the word of Sambandha. See, Sambandha, okay, how the scripture explains. Okay. Right. I mean, it is a preliminary requirement. But of course it takes some time in the beginning of a book to do that, to show how your book is going to adequately describe your proposed topic. You have to demonstrate it. But he is demonstrating it here, right? I mean, he's showing how the Bhagavatam presents the absolute truth. Okay, well, let's not confuse the two Sambandhas. The Sambandha that the Anuchedas are talking about now is different.
No, I perfectly.
Yes. Yeah, but you, well, the other three, yes, but how are you going to show, how are you going to prove that your book can adequately describe the topic without actually just showing it? You know, there's no theoretical proof of it. You have to make a demonstration. That is what he's doing. He's you know, we before, through the first 28 anuchets, we were not using the Bhagavatam as authority. Now we're looking at the Bhagavatam and seeing what it says. This is the beginning of our investigation into what does the Bhagavatam actually say, beginning going back to anuchet 29. So we've been doing this. We've been showing, in the most basic way, what the Bhagavatam says about the tattva, the supreme truth. That is demonstration of the relationship between the book and what it describes. So that's being done right now, from the second half of the Tattvasandarbha serves that purpose. But it'll take that whole discussion of the last half of the whole first Sandarbha to accomplish that. And then we will move on to the actual delineation of the tattva as Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Krishna in the second, third, and fourth Sandarbha. We have to dedicate half of the whole Sandarbha to establish the Vachya-Vachakata of the Bhagavatam.
So in other words, it's not just a matter of establishing it in a few anuchedas, it's actually establishing it in the whole text.
You could make a quick establishment of it, but Jiva Goswami wants to do it thoroughly. That's the main purpose of the second half of this first Sandarbha. I'm getting every 10 seconds this message. Okay. I'll give it to you afterwards. Okay. In 52.1, Jiva Goswami is explaining how the jiva is qualitatively the same as the tattva. Oh, no, it's okay. It's not there. Exit. Can I just do that? It wasn't terminated. Okay. That... In 52.1, we're describing the qualitative sameness of jiva and the supreme tattva. And it's that sameness that makes it possible for the jiva to understand the tattva. Because the jiva soul is spirit, he can understand the supreme spirit. He's a spirit himself. To me, it seems like the purport on the word vedyam, from vedyam vastavam vastu. Is this the purpose of describing the jiva's constitution? Yes, it's one purpose, it's part of it. And the point is being made that because the jiva is also pure spirit, he can understand the supreme. There's something else that comes up now in 52.3 and 53, that when we understand the jiva, then that makes it possible to begin understanding the supreme. Anyway, that all goes together. You're right. Okay. Otherwise, we will discuss the jiva, what he is, much more in detail in the Paramatma Sandarbha, where Jiva Goswami discusses the supreme truth with his various energies. And the jiva is one of those energies. So he gets his full discussion later on in the third Sandarbha. This is just for this specific purpose. We want to discover what is the tattva. And the jiva, because we're jivas, we should understand that makes us possible as jivas is to understand the tattva. A rock can't understand the absolute truth. A dog cannot understand. But a jiva with some intelligence can. Okay, then Vishnu Kantapu has two questions. Is it right to this question? No. Okay. If it's another question, then it has to wait. Okay. Go ahead. No. If it's that has to be gone through the channels. Because I know if we start, I will never. What? Okay. Unless it's a question right on this direct, you know, directly on this question. I don't mean going off on a tangent from it, but right on it, yeah. No, it doesn't have to be done that order. Oh, I'm sorry. That, I thought, I'm sorry, I thought you were talking about the Anubandha Chatushtha.
Yeah.
Udesha comes first. For, anyway, this is a general question. You shouldn't have asked it right now.
Oh, yeah?
That's not exactly to the point. I mean, it's a relevant question, but we're not opening up for questions.
Okay.
So. Anyway, the answer is yes. You have to mention something, give something a name first before you define it. You name it first, then you define it, and then you show how the definition is appropriate. Of course you have to do it in that order. Logically, it's impossible to do it any other way. You have to give something a name first, then define it, and then investigate the appropriateness of the definition. Okay. Vishwakantapu had two questions. Okay, now, we had Jiva Goswami saying that kaival yaika prayojanam, or the word kaivalya, he's interpreting to mean pure, a complete pureness, vishuddhatvam, and complete pureness is ultimately pure devotional service, and that will be explained in Priti Sandarbha. That's what Jiva Goswami says. But we have, this is Vishwakantapu's question. The word kaivalya is used elsewhere in the first canto, 8th chapter in Kunti Devi's prayer to mean something else. Kaivalya pateye namaha. And Sridhar Swami says he's capable, the kaivalya pati means he's capable of giving kaivalya. And that Sridhar Swami identifies as sayuja mukti, merging into Brahman while still maintaining your individuality. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur similarly says, that this kind of kaivalya, this personal kaivalya, is what some devotees who also want liberation are looking for. Yes, that's right. Kaivalya is used in a different sense, of course, many places in the Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami is not saying this is what kaivalya always has to mean. In this particular context, in the 12th canto, describing that kaivalya is the only prayojana of the Bhagavatam. That can't mean, even though it usually means, kaivalya usually means sayuja mukti, it can't mean that sayuja mukti is the only purpose of the Bhagavatam. I can't believe that after 12 cantos, that's the conclusion. So there, in that context, in this particular verse, a different meaning has to be taken. But yes, elsewhere, normally, it means a kind of liberation. Okay, and then we have to understand the word differently in different contexts.
Can it also be for a reason of Bhagavatam acting as a mohini, that to bewilder the foolish and atheistic people and mayavadis like that?
Yes.
So that, yeah, the mayavadis,
it's misleading to the impersonalists intentionally. Okay. If you want to discuss this further, submit it by email and we'll discuss it tomorrow morning. Let's try it that way, just to keep things on track. If you have a problem with the email, doing it, go to Dermot, he can send it for you. Okay, now we go back to 53. I'll read the English again. Okay, remember we were talking about how knowledge of the spirit soul, in other words, self-realization, the spirit soul knowing himself, is a good first step in understanding the Supreme, because the spirit soul is a sample of the Supreme, qualitatively non-different from him. So we continue from there in 53. Continuing this line of thought, if one first considers the entity you, that is the Jiva soul, to be conscious and eternal, One can thus then easily understand the entity that, the Supreme, to be similar in nature. To inform us of this idea, the Bhagavatam states that the jiva soul partakes of the Supreme's qualities. Thus the Bhagavatam follows the logic found in the Vedanta Sutras. This consideration is for the sake of understanding the other, the Supreme. The Bhagavatam says, and that's in Canto 11, Chapter 3, the soul was never born and will never die, nor does it grow or decay. It is actually the knower of the youth, middle age, and death of the material body. It can thus be understood to be pure consciousness, existing everywhere at all times, and never destroyed. Just as the life air within the body, although one, becomes like many, in contact with the various material senses, the soul appears to assume various material designations in contact with its material bodies. This is giving us some ideas about the nature of the spirit soul. Jiva Goswami goes on to comment on this verse, word by word. Atma shuddho jivo najajana najato janma bhava deva tad anantadastitva lakshano vikaro pinasti. The soul, or pure jiva, is never born. And because he has no birth, he is not subjected to the next stage of transformation, persistence. There are six stages of the existence of anything, not just living beings, anything in the material world. Naidate, Navardate, Vidyabhavad, Eva Viparinamo Pinarastaha. The soul also does not grow. And because he does not undergo bodily development, the notion that he creates byproducts is also denied. Hi yasmat vyabhicharinam agamapainam bala yuvari dehanam deva manushya dyakara dehanam va. Hear the word he. Where's the word he? The last word in the second line. Nakshiyate savanavid vyabhicharinam hi. So this word hi indeed means because. Yes, the word he, which usually means indeed, certainly, can sometimes have a logical meaning, because. Yasmat. So that means what's in the second line is reason for what's on the first line. The phrase of those things unsteady, vyabhicharinam, means the appearance and disappearances of the body of a child, a young man, and so on, or else bodies in the forms of a demigod, a human, and so on. Okay, what's vyabhichari about the coverings of the soul? He's the witness of those changing things. His own body is changing, and at the end of this life, he'll enter different bodies. So he's changing bodies from one lifetime to next lifetime also. Savanavit tat-tat-kala drashta nahi avastavatam drashta tadavasto bhavatityartaha. Knower of the phases of time, savanavit. What does savana mean, literally? No, it doesn't mean soma sacrifice. It means something involved in the soma sacrifice. What's the literal meaning? The squeezing. Su means to squeeze out. Yeah. I can squeeze the pulp out of a banana. That's also savana. But you don't do that in a soma sacrifice. You don't squeeze bananas in a soma sacrifice. But it could be called savana. What you squeeze in the soma sacrifice is the soma. You don't actually squeeze it with your hand. You have to beat it, I think. What do they do to get the soma juice out? boil it. Okay, they boil it out.
It's boiled in some, and then it's arranged like a cow's udder with cloth or some material like that.
Yes.
And then there are Samagana, there are hymns from the Samaveda to be chanted at that time. And just like milking a cow, the cloth or something in which that Somalata is kept, yeah, is made like a cow's udder, and then it's milked out like that.
Okay. Is this done over a course of a time so that there's some fermentation involved? Or?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, they get the juice out, and that's called savana. And it's done three times in the day. In a summer sacrifice, you're supposed to do it at sunrise, noon, and sunset. Those are the times for squeezing out the soma juice. So by extension, it means the three times in the day. Tree savana, literally, from soma terminology, soma sacrifice terminology, means the times when you do the squeezing. But it's extended to mean the three times in the day, no matter whether you're doing a soma sacrifice or not. These are the times you chant the Gayatri Mantra, the brahmanas. And then in this verse, savanavit means knower of the three times of the day, but that's metaphorical. That's upalakshana, a partial reference to mean knowing all kinds of times. It means knower of the phases of time. That's an extension of the meaning. Knower of the phases of time means witness of past, present, and future. Who's that? Who's the witness there? Yeah, we're talking about Jivasoul. That doesn't mean he's a wizard, he's a mystic yogi. That means he had a past and he remembers it. And he has a future and he's anticipating it. Everybody has some concept of present, past, and future. People who don't have a concept of the future, of what's not happening yet and might not happen, the future is just possibility for us now. People who don't think about the future don't have a future tense in their language, and there are some languages that don't. But most people, human beings, think about the future, even if they don't know exactly what it's going to be, they think about it. So Jivasoul he's a witness of past, present, and future. The meaning, Jivaswami continues, the meaning here is that a witness of various material conditions is not himself under those conditions. He's the savanavit. He's watching all these, good and bad things happening, but he's just a witness. They're not actually happening to him. They're happening to his bodies. Okay, so he's not under the conditions of what happens in the past, present, and future. What condition is he under? What is he then? If he's not what seems to be happening to his body? Answer is, nirvavasta ko sav atma ata aha upalabdhi matram gyanaika rupam katambhutam sarvatra dehe shashvad sarvada anuvartamanam iti. Then what is the unconditioned soul? The answer is that he is nothing but perception, or in other words, an embodiment of pure consciousness. How is he present? He is everywhere in the body and always going with it. Okay, again, this is things being said in such a way that it would mislead Mayavadis. It seems to be a confirmation that, yes, the pure spirit, the soul is pure consciousness. No duality. But that's not what's meant. In the context of the Bhagavatam, is not at all what's meant. Gyanam Advayam, and the Jiva soul is also Gyanam Advayam. Upalabdhi Matram is just another way to say the same thing. He's consciousness and nothing else. But the Bhagavatam doesn't mean to say that he has no body, he has no personality, he has no activities. He's pure consciousness. He's not anything unconscious. But he has his life and all the varieties and all the qualities that go along with living, existing as a living being. They're all there in the pure, and the jiva, who is a pure embodiment of pure consciousness. Then, continuing, how is he present? Answer, he is everywhere in the body and always going with it. The Sanskrit is sarvatra. How does it go? Sarvatra shashvad. Just two words. What's implied is in the body. He's always present in the living body. Of course, if you remove the soul from a living body, then it's dead and it decays. So a living body must have the soul present. As long as the body's alive, the soul is there. He's constant. The body's changing, but he's not changing, and he's constantly present. Even you go to sleep at night, and you dream, and your subtle body goes away, but your gross body, I mean, you may travel in your subtle body to somewhere while you're sleeping, but there's always that umbilical cord keeping you attached. It's a spacewalk. You're out there, but you're still attached. If the cord is broken, then the body is dead. Everywhere in the body and always going with it. Wherever the body goes, the soul goes along. Okay, so the jiva is pure consciousness. It doesn't mean he's nothing or without qualities. Another objection comes up in 53.3. Nanu nila jnanam nashtam, pita jnanam jatam, iti pratit ter, nagana sya anapayi tvam. But we see consciousness of something blue fading and consciousness of something yellow arising to take its place. Doesn't this mean that consciousness is impermanent? Well, okay. What is this? We're saying that the jiva is embodiment of pure consciousness. But then consciousness is not eternal. It's an embodiment of a temporary quality because consciousness is always changing. Answer. Tatraha indriya balena iti. Sadevid jnanam ekam indriya balena vividam kalpitam. This is answered by the phrase, by the power of the senses. Consciousness is one and persistent. So consciousness is the same. But by the power of the senses, it seems many. Indriya balena is in the verse. How does this work? Nilajakara vritaya eva jayante nashyanti cha nagyanamiti bhava. The transformations of consciousness into forms of blueness and so on come and go, but the consciousness itself does not come and go. Ayam agamapai tadavati bedena pratamas tarkaha. Drashtri drishya bedena dvitiyo pitarka gyeya. Vyabicharish avastitasya vabichare drishtanta prano yatind. Yateti. The distinction between that which comes and goes and the ultimate ground underlying coming and going supplies the first argument for the spiritual nature of the Supreme. We're trying to understand the spiritual nature of the spirit soul as a sample of the Supreme. So we're giving now tarkas, or arguments. First argument is that consciousness may change, or rather the body and what happens to it comes and goes, but the spirit soul does not come and go. He's constant. His consciousness is constant, even though his consciousness seems to change, but the underlying consciousness is constant. So that's the difference between the soul and the body. First argument about the difference of the soul and the body. The second argument proceeds from the distinction between the seer and the seen. The soul is the seer, and his body is just the seen. He sees himself, the soul is also seen, but the body is seen, but it's not seer. That's the difference between soul and body. Second one. And then continuing, an analogy to the soul's remaining steady among unsteady things is found in the words beginning just as the life air. Okay. What about the life air? We'll see that in the commentary. Let's read the commentary. The strategy of realizing oneself as a step toward realizing the Supreme was first taught where? I have it right in front of you. Where was it taught? Upanishads. The Vedanta Sutras point out this strategy in the aphorism, Anyartascha Paramarsha. According to Srila Baladeva Devushan, this aphorism refers to the well-known Dhara Vidya, or meditation on the sublime space, found in the Chandogya Upanishad 8.1. Yarasmin Brahmapure Dharam Pundarikam Veshma Dharosmin Antarakashas Tasmin Yarantas Tad Amveshtavyam. In this city of Brahman is a subtle residence in the form of a lotus. Within this residence is a subtle sky. So there's a house in the form of a lotus. Inside the house, there's a sky, a subtle sky. You should find out what is within that subtle sky. That's a riddle. The city of Brahman, Brahmapur, is the body of the meditator. The lotus-shaped residence in that Brahmapura is the heart. Within the small residence of the living being's heart is the supersoul, who is represented as the akasha. The supersoul is the sky. The sky that accommodates everything in the universe. The sky within the lotus of the heart is the same Supreme Lord who, with his all-perverting energies, creates and maintains the entire universe. And yet his personal expansion enters that smallest, most subtle space to accompany the living entity as long as he resides in the material world. Yatma pahatapapma vijaro vimityur vishoko vijagatso pipasaha satyakama satyasankalpa somveshtava somvigyasatavya. This is a continuation of that passage. This is describing what you do find inside that sky. Or in other words, what are the qualities of the Supreme Soul? You should inquire into the soul who is untouched by sin, free from old age, free from death, free from sorrow, free from hunger, and free from thirst, whose desires are always fulfilled, and whose intentions are always successful. You should inquire about him. A jiva can study within himself these eight perfections of the Supreme as they gradually appear within himself with the progress of his self-realization. The spirit soul in his own heart, sanctified by these qualities, can find the original source of all divine qualities, the personality of Godhead. Then the Chandogya Upanishad, a bit later, says, Sa esha samprasado smat chirirat samuttapya param jyotir upasampadyate ta swena rupen abhinishpadyate sa uttamak purushaha. When the fully satisfied soul rises up from the material body, he attains to the highest light and appears in his true form, his own true form. He is then a perfect person. The living being ready for liberation is called samprasada, meaning both fully satisfied and completely clear. Purified of all contaminating material desires, he naturally encounters the pure happiness of desiring to satisfy the Supreme. Upon leaving his present body, such a factually liberated soul can at once join the Supreme in his personal kingdom, never to return to material embodiment. When such souls reach the spiritual realm, they attain their eternal spiritual bodies, their previously forgotten true forms. Having passed through the divine light of the spiritual sky, they reach that place where they can enter the intimate association of the Supreme Person. Commenting on this passage, the Vedanta Sutras resolve a doubt as to why an account of the jiva's liberation is found in the middle of a meditation on the Supersoul. That's interesting. This Dharavidya is focusing attention on the Supersoul. Why are we talking about the liberation of the jiva? Anyartascha paramarshaha. The consideration or paramarsha of the jiva soul is for the purpose of understanding the other, the supreme soul. The goal of the jiva's own perfection is the paramatma. Upon joining the paramatma, the jiva achieves his own true form and personality. The two verses of Srimad Bhagavatam discussed in this anuchet and the next, and these are Canto 11, Chapter 3, verses 38 and 39. We read one verse, and the next one comes up in the next anuchet. These two verses give the same version of meditation. Okay, something similar to the Dharavidya. A kind in which one contemplates one's own self as a sample of the Supreme. The purified soul becomes free from the six conditions of material life: birth, growth, persistence, procreation, decline, and death. Of these six, only three, birth, persistence, and procreation, are mentioned in the verse cited here. But as Sri Jiva Goswami shows, he has shown, these imply the other three conditions of material life. This verse shows two ways of understanding the jiva's spiritual nature, which is a reflection of the Supreme's perfect nature. The soul suffers no change while changing bodies, and he is the living, conscious witness of the material transformations of his own body and the world around him. So that's, in a nutshell, what we're saying about the jiva. As a reflection or a sample of the Supreme, he's unchanging. He's living through changing bodies, but he's alive. He's the witness of the material transformations, and he's different from them. Okay, we'll stop here for today. It's a little early, but we'll stop, and we'll move on tomorrow. Dhammadhar Prabhu wanted to announce guest speakers we're having in the next couple of days. Can you take the microphone? Yeah. That's it. Next class.
I just want to let the devotees know, tomorrow Jayananda Maharaj will be giving Bhagavatam class. And also I invited Smita Krishna Maharaj for Wednesday evening. He's ready to give an evening class here Wednesday evening.
We'll start what time? After Dhammadharasa.
Yeah, after Dhammadharasa comes 6:30. Then that's from 7 to 8 program. And he'll be giving the Bhagavatam class the next morning. That's Wednesday evening and Thursday Bhagavatam class.
Will he stay here?
No, Bhaktivinoda Ashram. I already spoke to him.
Okay, he'll be there. Okay.
So today I'm going to go to Vrindavan, and I'm hoping to find more and more sannyasis and senior devotees to invite here. So please pray so we can have more and more senior association. So I'm making some effort towards that, but I need your support, especially in the form of prayers. Thank you.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.